2. Emerging Thoughts. This chapter contains some of my own thoughts and feelings which have come about as a result of writing the articles in this compilation and those in the previous volume 9-11 Finding the Truth. It also contains some thoughts and feelings expressed to me by various people that have reached, more or less, the same understanding of the 9-11 cover-up as I have. In writing all of these articles, over a period of more than 10 years, a very strange picture emerges. The cover-up of 9-11 is like some strange, frightening malevolent beast, with tendrils seemingly stretching across the world and into certain people's hearts and minds. Those who have been stung by these tendrils don't seem to have a conscience about what they say or do. Perhaps I'm being overdramatic and they are just victims of their own egos, or they have had to make too many compromises in their personal lives and circumstances. From what I have written, you can make your own judgment. Whatever the cause, they have acted in a callous, dishonest and occasionally threatening manner. Rhetorical questions. As a way of setting the scene for the rest of this book, please consider this section carefully. For those that attend alternative conferences and events, or follow various alternative radio shows, podcasts, YouTube channels and the like, I have listed the following questions to ask yourselves. These questions have come about as a result of my past dealing with other researchers, hosts and conference organizers. Should a platform be given to those who are found to be untruthful? Should those found to be lying be challenged, or should we just assume they are mistaken and clap anyway? For example, when a radio show guest is wrong in what they are saying or has an incomplete picture of the facts, should the host attempt to correct or enlighten the guest in a suitable manner? Or should the host just continue and pretend nothing is wrong? Does the truth matter? Is an opinion more important than truth and evidence? If someone presents information later shown to be false, should that person correct the statements about the false information and apologize? Are intelligence agencies concerned that access to alternative information sources might cause the revelation of closely guarded secrets to a wider audience? Do you value knowing and speaking the truth above having a friendship? In a community of truth seekers, is it offensive to state you are a truth knower, at least in relation to certain topics and events? The truth needs no protection. I have been thinking about the phrase, saying the truth needs no protection, and wondering if this phrase is itself true. One or two people have said to me things along the lines of, "So, Andrew, are you saying that it is only you and Dr. Judy Wood that are telling the truth about what happened on 9-11? Of course, this is not really what I am saying, but it may come across that way, because of the number of people I have challenged to tell the truth. When they have failed this challenge, I have then written about them. I have begun to wonder what might have happened if Dr. Judy Wood had not decided to speak out and make a website and then challenge NIST. Whilst the awareness of what Dr. Wood has discovered and shown is still quite limited, it is not insignificant. Whether, at this time, November 2017, it could be described as a growing awareness is difficult to say. I also wonder what the awareness level would be if I had not compiled my first book 9-11 Finding the Truth. Thanks to the efforts of a number of dedicated activists, we now have a firm public record of disclosure. Dr. Wood has given talks in several US towns, several UK cities and towns, and she has given presentations in two European countries. In cyberspace, Dr. Wood, myself and other figures such as Dr. Morgan Reynolds, Jerry Liefart, Richard D. Hall and others have also carried out this disclosure, about what really happened on the 11th of September and how it has been covered up. Of particular note are Richard D. Hall's single-handed and highly skilled efforts to build a vehicle which has allowed him to convey important truths to people in the UK and around the world. It is largely due to his work that, in the UK and Europe, knowledge of Dr. Judy Wood's book Where Did the Towers Go? Has grown considerably since the book was published late in 2010. Similarly, Dr. Wood's relentless efforts from the USA, giving many, many radio and podcast interviews, has also gradually raised awareness of the evidence which proves that the World Trade Center was destroyed using an undisclosed technology, which someone knows about. Someone is working very hard to keep knowledge of all this covered up. The cover-up works too, but I should not be too surprised really, when things like cures for cancer have been covered up for perhaps 80 years, or maybe even longer. Soft cover-up and hard cover-up. Consider regimes in the former USSR and East Germany, They would cover up corruption and a deeper agenda with threats, violence, kidnappings and so forth. Perhaps I can call this hard cover-up. In our current regime, cover-up is achieved by psychological means, ridicule, marginalization, ostracism and through using people who've had past misdemeanors and making deals with them, or offering them money, as seems to be the case with Jeff Bridger, see Chapter 9, and Jeremy Riz, see Chapter 0. Perhaps I can call this soft cover-up. More latterly, one of the blanket phrases has been laid down to cover many potential avenues for disclosure is national security. As I showed in 9/11 Finding the Truth, censorship extends to media which should be free and open, such as Huffington Post, Wikipedia, internet forums and even, to some extent, YouTube. Other methods of soft cover-up are largely psychological in nature and seem to employ a kind of social engineering. I discuss this in a satirical article in Chapter 3. Threats and protection. Over the years, I have developed two main lines of thought on whether people like Dr. Wood and myself, who are working to break down the cover-up, are in danger. One line of thought is that basically we are protected, the other line is that we are no threat to anyone because the number of people who know the truth is minuscule in proportion to the total population of the world. Also, people like Dr. Judy Wood and myself have no significant power or influence over others, nor would we want it. I personally have never received any credible threats, nor have I experienced any overtly negative effects on my life by being involved in 9/11 research and related research. Certainly, a fair number of my old friendships have faded quite a bit and I feel more isolated in the way I see things in the world now, making small talk much more difficult than it used to be. Dr. Wood has received threats in the past, but has continued to speak about her research. Since I learned from her about her earlier life, parts of which were very traumatic, to say the least, I have concluded that there are powerful positive forces at work, which have been preventing the evil perpetrators from having things all their own way. I have sometimes considered there is a game going on, which has certain rules. If we play by the rules, we may eventually win the game. The opposing forces think they can win by cheating or being dishonest, but in reality, they cannot win using such tactics. Those of us that are playing by the rules automatically gain some kind of protection, by doing things correctly, following their hearts and their intuition and the maintaining their integrity, and a balance of their logic and emotions, along with preserving a sense of humor. The opponents can only give the appearance of doing these things, because they have engaged in one or more acts of deception, so they do not have this inbuilt spiritual protection. The numbers game. Now, only a minority of a minority are aware of what Dr. Wood and myself have packaged up and presented. There is an even smaller number of people that understand what the implications are. I have had the pleasure of communicating, now, with a fair number of those people, and I might even be able to remember each of their names if I really tried. However, Dr. Wood and myself are no real threat to the powers that be, PTB, at the moment, because their system is still functioning pretty well, even though some of the pixels in their super high definition screen of reality are blinking the wrong color or have gone dead. Most people can't see these or don't worry that a new picture of reality might be emerging. Also, the muddle up slash cover up is already in place, so even exposure to a large audience would have a limited effect, unless it was repeated daily for weeks on end, in the same way that the original full story of 9/11 was and is repeated almost daily. Education, credentials, arrogance, experience. It seems there is a fine line between education and indoctrination. Some people are proud of not being educated, because they think they have been less indoctrinated. Sometimes, however, they may not realize that they can be indoctrinated by ongoing propaganda in the mainstream media, or other sources of information they may be exposed to on a regular basis. Is having a formal education useful in finding out about the truth of what happened on 9/11? Or does it hamper an honest investigation of the facts? In my experience, the answer to this question is quite complicated. People that I've spoken to have often mentioned that they intuitively knew, on the 11th of September, that what they were shown on television was not right, true. However, they have then said that they needed the expertise of someone like Dr. Judy Wood to show them what parts of the official story of 9/11 could not be true. And, of course, I also needed to be shown this. So, even though I have had a university education, and I started investigating the official story of 9/11 in 2003, even after 12 months, I still didn't have everything straightened out in my mind. Once I did have things straightened out, I was able to use the tools given to me in my education to help me articulate and pass on my understanding to other people, as I'm attempting to do right now. However, for many who are more deeply embedded in the educational, academic establishment, it seems they are unable to confront or dispassionately analyze the 9/11 evidence for themselves. Even close associates of Dr. Judy Wood herself have not been able to accept what she has shown them, personally. Although I currently only work part-time in education, as far as I know, none of my peers are even aware of any of the research I write about, or articles I have written. One would hope that the peer review process in science would help expose the obvious problems with the official story not being supported by available scientific evidence. The fact that this has not happened shows that the peer review process is not pure, but it is driven by vested interests and the traumatized psyche of those unable to accept the deeply troubling truths that are revealed in the evidence discovered and catalogued this far. Oftentimes, the peer review card is played by skeptics, who claim that because this or that has not appeared in a peer-reviewed journal, it cannot be true, correct. The curse of the truth? A number of people that have read Dr. Judy Wood's book Where Did the Towers Go? Have communicated with me to express how much the knowledge they gain from reading this book changes them, changes the way they look at the world and it changes their relationship to it. Sometimes, it seems like knowing the truth is a curse. I have described this as a feeling of isolation, like you become an intellectual leper. Most people live with deception on a far deeper level than they seem consciously aware, and some just don't seem to care what the truth is. Others seem, on the surface, to care, but when they are confronted with certain evidence and truth, they are seemingly unable to process it. It's like the paper jams in the printer and no information can be placed on the paper has become crumpled and no new information can be printed on it. Perhaps this is to do with their level of consciousness or the status of their spiritual awareness, or something akin to these things. Since 2008, I have gradually felt more isolated, because of the way I now see the world. This has happened on a personal and interpersonal level and even in the sphere of what is often called the truth-seeking community. For example, my experiences with web radio host Henrik Palmgren have been, to say the least, disenchanting, see Chapter 13. Dealing with the truth. I know for sure that evil, hidden forces are at work, and they have sophisticated technology and methods at their disposal. Evidence from 9/11 seems to show that they can engineer the underlying fabric of our reality, and hence perhaps achieve any conceivable outcome. I wasn't absolutely sure of this until 2008. Since then, I have slowly come to terms with the implications of that knowledge. It's like you are entering a whole new world and you have to leave almost everything behind in the old one. In knowing and accepting this truth, you cannot go back to the old world. One chap who has experienced this same knowing told me he feels like God reached down and said, "You're going to be lonely. I wish to call it an immaculate burden. I think it's some kind of lesson. Maybe you're supposed to learn how to choose wisely the evidence you share and who you share it with. Maybe something was unlocked in our heads and then you want to bring your loved ones with you but you can't. I honestly don't know if this sucks or not." You feel sorrow as you watch others get their psychology operated on and all you can do is watch and understand. It takes everything you're made of to survive this kind of transition. Some of my friends didn't make it, but they are still friends. Sometimes I wonder what they feel about me now. I don't get too close anymore but I always have open arms. We hope that friends and family will listen to us because they respect us. Sadly, it does not seem to work that way. People are normally just happier to go along with the program. On the theme of waking up and grasping what happened on the 11th of September, I had been communicating with Claudia von Werloff, whom I met in April 2013. I expressed the feeling that it was like I'd gone over a wall or through a barrier that others couldn't cross. She said, "Andrew, you are the first person I know who speaks about this barrier or wall. It is exactly my experience since I heard about the earthquake in Haiti, was put into contact with Rosalie Bertel and read her book Planet Earth, the latest weapon of war. I was thrown over this wall and landed on its other side. Since then I have been living beyond the barrier and cannot make myself heard or understood by the ones on the normal side. The change happened like an earthquake within my body. I fell ill, and when I got up, everything had changed. It was like a call from the spiritual world, the Earth herself perhaps, and this is why I founded the planetary movement for Mother Earth. I thought it could be the means to move other people over the barrier as well. And it is my experience as well that I failed in trying to do so, until now. I tried to find an expression that would define the new way to look at the world as something much like a planetary consciousness. I know that Rosalie Bertell had it, and this was like a bond between us. When I found out that people who had read her book nevertheless did not climb over the wall, she told me, "There are people who do not understand." But she did not know why. Yes, it is like an aversion. I know one woman who made the journey, but was so shocked that she returned to the normal side, by denying the reality she became conscious of. I do not know if she succeeded because she would never speak with me again. An argument against the journey is, what would people do with this knowledge, as they cannot do anything against the perpetrators? But, who knows? Only when being clear about the reality can we start to think and act properly, without that we would always be behind, hopelessly lost in confusion. The radical poet and Gyborg Bachmann from Austria once has said, "It is a reasonable demand that people should know the truth." Yes, because who else? And, most important, whereas we are discussing if or if not, they are destroying the planet. There is no choice. We cannot behave as if the world was still the one we knew before. I think there is a subconscious reaction to the truth that is revealed in the study of 9/11 evidence. Those that are ready to accept it react differently to those that aren't ready. Perhaps this is to do with what a friend called Pete Taylor Wood suggested. The forces or energies that were employed in the destruction of the World Trade Center are the same as those from which life itself arises. Why don't other researchers know the truth? In 2015, a 3-hour-long YouTube video was released called JFK to 9/11 Everything is a Rich Man's Trick. The narrator and main researcher appears to be Francis Richard Connolly. This was one of the most in-depth analyses of the Kennedy assassination that I had seen, and it quickly seemed to have garnered over 1 million views. The video presents evidence in a clear, concise manner and discusses some of the parties and interests that were behind JFK's assassination. It introduced many things I hadn't been aware of, and the overall presentation of the JFK-related material is most compelling. Judith Vary Baker, former girlfriend of Lee Harvey Oswald, told me she thought this film was mostly correct. However, the last half an hour of the film covers 9/11 and in doing so covers the usual disinformation about the WTC undergoing controlled demolition. My reason for mentioning this is to raise the question: if this researcher is so thorough in one area, why are they so hopelessly wrong in another? Why haven't they seen the obvious truth and rejected the disinformation? It's a common problem. But it also raises another issue: perhaps they are willing to reveal all the truth about JFK's assassination now, as many or all the people involved and affected are dead or very old now. It was over 50 years ago. There has never been a real criminal prosecution for the JFK assassination. We can easily fast forward further into the future and see the same situation. Read the events of 9/11, with each anniversary seeing a lack of prosecution, because of widespread corruption and dishonesty. Tom Faratulli wrote to me to say, "I keep thinking of the 9/11 cover-up as having layer upon layer. And now I'm seeing it as more like a poisonous snake who keeps shedding its skin. Most think of the 9/11 event as being the primary, and the cover-up as the secondary. Now, I think just the reverse. There could be even more design and planning that went into the cover-up, than the event itself. It's getting so hard to keep track of all the players, we really need a scorecard." Well, perhaps this book and the previous volume represent some kind of scorecard. Throughout this book, we will look at yet more examples of apparent unwillingness among researchers, speakers and activists to discuss certain 9/11 evidence and conclusions, especially in Chapter 12. For the moment, let us mention one person who is willing to tell people some of the grim truth about the destruction of the WTC on the 11th of September. Dr. Eric Larson, thank you. I would like to mention the work of Dr. Eric Larson, Professor Emeritus of English at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, CUNY. Dr. Larson wrote the foreword to the WTTG book and he described it as the most important book of the 21st century. I agree, this is the main reason I have composed this volume and the previous one. Dr. Larson has written a number of books, including The Skull of Yorick, The Emptiness of American Thinking at a Time of Grave Peril, Studies in the Cover-Up of 9/11, 2011. He founded the Oliver Arts and Open Press in 2009. Since then, Dr. Larson has written a number of articles about Dr. Judy Wood and her research, and these have been posted on a website called Intrepid Report. One of these articles, called Serpent Songs in America, discusses Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. President Reagan appointed Dr. Roberts as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy in 1980 or 1981. Roberts posted an article in March 2011 called The Perfidy of Government, Evidence v. Denial, which is about three recent books that explain how we lost our economy, the Constitution and our civil liberties, and how peace lost out to war. Dr. Larson observes and highlights how Roberts suddenly switches from a discussion of the JFK and RFK assassinations to mentioning 9/11. Roberts writes, Niels Harrit, a professor of nanochemistry at the University of Copenhagen, together with U.S. physicists and engineers, published a paper in the Open Chemical Physics Journal in 2009 that proves that nanothermite was used to bring down the World Trade Center towers. Dr. Larson suggests, and I agree, that this is a deliberate tactic to insert disinformation once the reader's trust has been established. The reader may think that Roberts is brave enough to imply there was a conspiracy to assassinate Kennedy and another conspiracy to destroy the World Trade Center on the 11th of September. While he has got the reader to think this way, he deliberately misleads them regarding what happened on the 11th of September. Dr. Larson has written another series of articles, published at intrepidreport.com, called Dr. Judy Wood and the Future of the World. This is recommended reading. And Paul T. Hellyer, Full Disclosure. On the 18th of March 2015, David Whitehead posted a video address entitled Full Disclosure by retired Canadian politician Paul Hellyer. I have been following Mr. Hellyer since late 2005, when he went public with his statements about the UFO/ET cover-up, having read Colonel Philip J. Corso's book, The Day After Roswell. Paul Hellyer spoke at the 2012 Global Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference, and so did Dr. Judy Wood, and so did I. Although Hellyer incorrectly states that some of the WTC buildings had been rigged for controlled demolition, he goes on to say, at 16:50 in this video, a new weapon of mass destruction was used to reduce the concrete and steel to dust before it reached the ground. If you have any doubts about this, get a copy of Dr. Judy Wood's book entitled Where Did the Towers Go? 500 pages of meticulous evidence. Out of the many books seen, in the background, in this video, this is the only one that Hellyer holds up to the viewer. I would suggest this is a measure of the book's importance. Thank you, Mr. Hellyer. Leading the way. So, Mr. Hellyer, who was once Defense Minister for Canada, has shown the way for others to follow. The first others, I would argue, should be those in the research community, such as Steve Bassett, Joseph Farrell and Ian R. Crane. However, they have consistently passed on opportunities to speak about the evidence. I hope that they will do what they have not done yet, accurately report the evidence we know as the truth and accurately describe the implications of it. As the years pass, the force of reason needed to convey this truth to people will only increase, if the realization of the truth is not displayed and delivered to the precious few who are listening to those in the research community, rather than listening to the robotic mouthpieces following their carefully authored scripts in the mainstream media. And, as I write this piece, there is some possibility that the reluctance to both talk about and listen to this sort of evidence will also increase, as UK PM David Cameron is said to want to revive moves for tough action against non-violent extremists, to target radicalization. So, who is going to accurately report what they realize is the truth? Will anyone younger than Mr. Hellyer be up to the job? Some notes about received correspondence. I do get some funny messages from time to time, so I may be a little guarded or even snarky in my responses, until I learn more about whomever has sent this correspondence. In the main, however, most of the messages I get are positive and express gratitude, which is partly what keeps me going. One thing that can be frustrating is when basic questions are asked that have already been answered in one or more of the videos or interviews that Dr. Wood or myself have given. By now, There are probably a total of about 100 interviews and presentations given by myself and Dr. Wood that are freely viewable and downloadable online. Some are more formal than others, but by listening to a good number of them, it should be possible to gain a fairly good impression of the sort of people we are. In most cases, when people write to us, or comment on the videos, we don't know them. There aren't any videos of these people online, and so we can't get to know them, and it would be difficult to find the time to do so if such videos were available. It is sometimes the case, then, that we can give people short shrift if they appear not to have studied the available materials well enough. We hope and even expect that if people are interested enough in studying the available evidence, they will devote an appropriate amount of time to complete this study. We have spent literally years of our time making this information available either for free or at relatively low cost. Dr. Wood gets many more emails per day. I think it's worth saying that she is not obliged to respond to anyone's email messages, and neither am I. We haven't been appointed by any official body to investigate 9/11 or any other topic. We haven't been paid any money and we haven't even been invited to do an investigation. Hence, we are volunteers, and have no responsibility to do anything at all. Obviously, we have chosen to do what we do because we feel it is of huge importance, so important that we have chosen to sacrifice various things, in my case, mainly a relatively small amount of money and a considerable amount of time. Also, because of the comprehensive investigation Dr. Wood has done into the events of 9/11 and my support of that research, we often get asked to look into other events which may not necessarily have a simple explanation or events that, like 9/11, have in no way been appropriately investigated by those that are paid to do such investigations, be they journalists or officials of one kind or another. I discuss an example of this in Chapter 26,